The following is a KTCK Sports Presentation.
Kick it. It's time for the Kick Around, the ticket style show about soccer and all that implies. Two straight hours of HSOs in the Premier League, MLS, the National Team, and Champions League. Soccer never stops, and neither do our hosts. Hoping for an off-season at some point, here are Andy Swift and Peter Welpton on Sports Radio, 96.7 and 1310, The Tick.
Inside by Fiola. Shallow. Fiola can go on here. Hungary might be in business. Can he finish it? You bet he can! What an amazing moment! Attila Fiola, solo goal, stuns France. The ultimate sucker punch.
Howdy, hopey ones. Welcome to today's Kick Around. As always, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio, 96.7 and 1310. The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks the soccer and all that implies. Hi there. For those new here, I'm Peter. How you doing? And with me is my soccer-talking BFF and man about town, the one, the only, Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter, how's it going? How is your Euro-watching experience going so far?
It has been more difficult now that, you know, for the first time in a while, this is weird how my career path has worked. These summertime tournaments have, over the last several years, coincided with me just not working full-time, kind of like doing freelance work, dating back to 2018 and 2014. Now, I'm full-time employed again, and so I don't have the time to watch all of it in real time. I got to watch it, like, in the afternoons or evenings.
You're not a man of leisure anymore.
No. Can't just, you know.
And do you try to avoid knowing the scores?
No, I gave up on trying to do that.
Okay. When I text you in the middle of a game, you're okay with that?
Yeah, just go ahead. Because in many ways, it actually helps, because if I know in advance that a game's a blowout or a dullard, I just kind of skim through it. You know, some of these games are kind of exciting, and you want to watch them. And
yeah, absolutely. I think,
but I will say this: it has precluded me from watching as much of the Copa as I wanted to, because I'm too busy watching European games.
Correct. Yes, I understand that, and we'll talk Copa later, but it's been fun having actual fans in the stands, I think, and that's helped the viewing experience of this particular tournament, the Euros.
I think what has been interesting is watching, because, you know, this, what's unusual about this European tournament is they're playing it in multiple places, and so not every place has the same allowances for fans. So today, this morning, we saw the amazing Hungarian atmosphere. Yeah. Which, by the way, are you aware of the whole controversy around the Hungarian government?
Yes, not related to COVID, because we're talking in the middle of a big crowd, and this is independent of the COVID issue. Yes,
yeah, kind of like the populistic authoritarian. Yes. Uh-huh. Find that interesting.
Anyway, at the same time, crazily enough, they're really high with vaccination rates, and that's why they could.
Yeah, but they had a really high. Anyway, so my point being is we saw this amazing scenes in Hungary today, and then we got the Germany Portugal game, which was played in Munich. Mm-hmm. Which had a very sparse crowd in comparison.
Did you see the supporters behind the goal, like every third seat?
Yes, it's very weird.
And just kind of standing there.
It's very
strange. It almost seemed like cardboard cutouts.
Now, what I did notice, and I don't know if anybody else picked up on this, at the Munich Stadium, did you see that incredible contraption between the benches where the players come in and out of it? It's like a trap door. That's covered in grass.
It was really weird.
Did you see this?
I did see this earlier, and I was very confused by it.
Is this a COVID spread prevention mechanism?
No, I think it's where the players enter and exit their locker rooms.
Yeah.
But instead of it being a door into a hallway or down some regular stairs into a tunnel,
like most stadiums,
it's almost like a dumbwaiter that opens up magically. Like, you don't even see it's there, and then suddenly these two grass panels open up. And then these stairs kind of pneumatically lift out of the ground, and a player magically appears like it's a rock star.
They should fog it up a little bit.
They should.
It's something out of like the Thriller video or something.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. By the way, Spain and Poland are playing now, and they're in the first quarter of the game. All right. So anyway, we're going to talk lots of Euros. We will get to the Copa Americas here a little bit later on. FC Dallas starts playing again tonight. I'm actually going to that game. I'm kind of excited about going to that. And then I want to have a conversation about creating fan bases.
Yeah,
that has started earlier this week and some different other things, and I want Andy's opinion on some of this stuff.
I'm here for it.
So about the European Championships, I'm wondering from your perspective, Andy, is this going about the way that you thought it was going to go?
To me, it is. The biggest surprises are really the teams that are good traditionally that we thought weren't going to be as good this tournament actually doing okay, like Germany, like Italy doing really well. Belgium, we thought would stumble, and because they're Belgium and they're okay, they're winning. And then Holland, who we thought was going to be a disaster just because of their coach, and they're playing all their games at home, and they've already gone through. So I think that's the biggest surprise, is there's really no surprises. Right?
Normal good performers are performing good, and the normal bad performers aren't.
In a tournament like this, Euros and World Cups, traditionally, you get your surprises early on. And then as the tournament advances and you get into the next rounds, that's when the cream of the crop rises and the teams with depth start playing well and blah, blah, blah.
All right. Tomorrow's interesting because tomorrow's the day that the round three of games begin. And what I'm interested from your perspective as somebody who has organized tournaments and is involved in the international
Because the Dallas Cup
game,
is just like the World Cup. Oh, no, right. You're talking about on the pro side. Okay, all right.
Well, both. No, seriously. I mean this very seriously. Yeah. You know, a lot of the noise about this particular tournament is the fact that they've gone to 24 teams. Mm-hmm. And to get to the next round, to the knockout stage, there is a host of third place teams that will advance. Yeah. And many people are really put out by the fact that there will be a litany of teams who get to play in the knockout rounds that may have just won one game, for example.
Yeah. So this is the second Euros now that we have a field of 24 with the same format. The World Cup has had this in the past for one or two World Cups where it was 24 and the best thirds advance. A lot of the youth World Cups have the 24-team format. So, I mean, the weird thing about it is, to me, is that, and this is just like in tournaments, even youth tournaments like the Dallas Cup, is then third-place teams are competing with each other for being one of the best finishing third-place teams. For example, in this one, it's the four best third place teams out of the six groups advance. But they're using results from their own groups, and some groups are tougher than other groups, right? So if you have an easier-ish group, you probably have a better chance of advancing as a third than if you come out of the group of death, for example, which is the Germany, Portugal, and France group.
So I was asked, well, what's the solution? Well, there's two solutions. One is you limit the number of teams, which nobody would be super happy about, because then the North Macedonias and stuff never get a chance.
Yeah, it's 16. Below 24, it would have to be 16.
Right, so it really reduces. Yeah. So the next question is, well, then how do you fix it the other? Well, then you go to 32
teams. Which is what the World Cup did.
Right, but the problem with that is now you get a bunch of European teams that really aren't necessarily up to snuff.
Right.
You may get an Ireland, or you may get an Israel, or something like that. So now your European championships are filled with
fan bases. But yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Exactly. And how many countries are in Europe?
55.
So it would be like 60% almost of the countries making it to the final round. You know,
but what I'm saying is that in terms of what's the worst poison? Is the worst poison having third place teams get through to the knockout rounds, or a bunch of group stage games that stink because there's a bunch of stinker teams in the tournament?
Yeah. Now,
I think the 24 actually, if you think about it for a few minutes, it actually is the better model.
Yeah. So you can look at the World Cup. The World Cup went from 16 to 24, and then 24 to 32 quickly because of that,
right?
Because of the same issue. And a lot of people complained that when it was 32 teams, we were getting now weaker teams in group play. And it kind of, I think you can make an argument that there are some games, World Cup games that have been played that weren't up to World Cup standards for the same reason. But now they're going to raise it to, like, what, 48? And it's even going to get worse at the World Cup level. So in some ways, 24 is just perfect for Europe, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not super happy that certain teams are going to get to play a knockout game, but I do think it's better than having to watch a bunch of not very good European teams play three games.
Look, now, those four third-place teams that advance, they will all play a group winner. And so if the group winner is a legit group winner, then they should be able to beat that third-place team in advance. So, I don't know.
So the big news of the day was the result that I'm pretty sure, and we'll talk about predictions and stuff here in a second, but I'm 99% sure the betting money on France-Hungary weighed very heavily on France, because I think most people have France winning the entire tournament. And I personally, while I picked France to win this game, in fact, I had them winning as a 4-0 favorite. I had them winning 4-0. Wow. The fact that Hungary ends up getting a point out of this game really did two things. One is that always there's in these tournaments, there's always one of these weird one-off games. And two, you can never, ever, ever discount the power of a full stadium in a frenzied state like it was this morning in Hungary.
Yeah, one of the weird things about these Euros, like you said, the fact that they're playing in 11 different venues, but within that weirdness, each group has one team host three games. And in this group, it's Hungary.
In Budapest.
And so it still didn't prevent most all of us from, because Hungary was in the group of death, nobody gave Hungary much of a chance to advance out of the group stage. Now, one draw doesn't mean like, oh, okay, because they still have to go get a result against Germany to even have a chance to get out of group. But you're right. Playing in front of the home crowd makes a difference. And this is why originally, before the tournament started, I had Denmark actually winning their group.
Because they were playing in Copenhagen.
Yeah, because they were playing in Copenhagen, and I thought Belgium was going to get off to a slow start. De Bruyne was coming off a very serious injury, and he wasn't going to be 100% at the start. And then all this Eriksen thing happened. But think about this. If the Eriksen injury doesn't happen, they end up beating Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And then this game against Belgium turns out maybe they draw. Denmark very well could have won that group. So, yes, playing in front of the home crowd I think does make a big difference. And I think maybe it's helping Germany as well.
I think it's helping Germany. It clearly is helping Hungary, because Hungary is not a very good national team in the scheme of things. But the power of 60,000 people, and I think it should also be noted that it's like this is the first time we're seeing a completely 100% full stadium in soccer globally in this type of situation. And I think that even amplifies
it.
Even more. So Hungary really came out to play today. France was far more disappointing in this game than they were in their game against the Germans, which they looked amazing. Pogba was like all over, you know, everybody was talking about how amazing Pogba was, although he wasn't the best player on the team. It was Conte.
Yeah.
And
Conte's
so,
the best player on that team, period.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he makes that thing happen.
He is
just like he makes his club teams happen.
The heart and soul of that team. But Hungary really put in a great fight today, and they sucker punched France, and you were fairly certain that France was at least going to get one, if not two goals. It would have probably been really heartbreaking to see Hungary not at least get something from that game. But that was good entertainment for the dollar on an 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
It was. It was an entertaining game. The start that we've seen France have in this World Cup, though, is not too indifferent from how they started the World Cup, which they won, the last one, where, you know, it's the best team. On paper, it's the team with the most depth. It's the favorite, which I think in 2018 they were among the favorites. They weren't the favorite; they were among the favorites. And they, you know, like often happens in World Cups, the team that eventually wins it is not the team that's clicking on all cylinders after the first couple games. And I think this is what we're seeing from France. It's going to take a little while for them to really get going. Although Benzema and Mbappe and Griezmann up front didn't look bad. I mean, you saw some good things. The ball just didn't end up hitting the back of the net, right?
Well, they all as a squad looked like they had just turned it down a notch, because they had expended a lot of energy in that German
game. Maybe they were intimidated by the 77,000.
Well, I'm sure the crowd, I think the crowd had a big part in it.
Yeah, more to motivate Hungary than to intimidate France, but...
The reason why that does become interesting is because now, based on the results of today, everything does rely on the third round of games, because now France now has to play. Is it? I guess they're playing Hungary.
No, France plays Portugal.
France plays Portugal. Yeah. German plays Hungary.
Right.
And there's a lot of ways that this can, you know, turn out. France is going to go through almost certainly.
But not necessarily winning their group.
But not necessarily winning the group.
Right.
And they play all these games at the same time.
Right.
In each group.
So it's really, really interesting. Now, the teams that end up playing later, the groups that play later, those know results from earlier groups when it comes to best third placement, third place placement, and those teams do have an advantage. So this group will have an advantage over earlier, like A, B, C groups, which get played earlier in the schedule. That makes sense, right?
Yeah. And then the Germany-Portugal game, well, maybe we should pick it up there. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about the Germany-Portugal result and go over some of my predictions next on the Kick Around. All right, welcome back to the Kick Around. Let's see. We're doing a soccer show. We're doing a soccer show. We're
talking Euros.
And we'll talk some Copa America here soon. All right, so let's pick up with Germany and Portugal today.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I can't tell you how much Pepe
bothers you.
Rubs me the wrong way.
For years now, right?
Yes, I've always thought he was
me and like 8 million other
a terrible human being in every way, shape, and form.
And he's not even as good as he used to be. Which
no, and of course Ronaldo scored again today right off the bat. And I think I had the counterintuitive prediction that Germany was going to win this game, and a lot of people thought Portugal would, based off of Portugal's got a lot of attacking talent, and the Germans kind of struggled against France and. And Jurgen Löw is, you know, walking out. Who really knows where the Germans are these days? But man, when the machine turned on and flipped the switch, it turned on and it just mowed over Portugal today.
And that is a great way to describe their performance today. They were a machine.
They were
methodical, precise. They were the Germany that we're used to seeing, right? Like. Long time ago, 10 years ago.
The return of Hummels and Mueller are you know, after being kind of set aside due to age and now being asked to come back, I think coincides with somewhat of a feeling of normalcy with the German team at this point. But there's so much talent there, and they just play this kind of consistent style that's very dependable. And even though they struggled against France in many ways, that was a good game to watch as well.
Yeah, today. And Portugal, I don't know where before the tournament started, where you picked them, if you had them advancing out of the group or how you had this group finishing. I mean, I had France finishing this group, Germany finishing second, and Portugal struggling to perhaps make it as a third place team.
I thought Portugal would get through, but I had the same thing. Germany, Portugal.
And it's because Ronaldo is on the team and Fernandes, obviously, and Jota. But in the back, team's very wonky.
I don't think they have the depth other teams do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100%, you know, he continues to score goals, but I'm not 100% sure that Cristiano playing as a striker is necessarily the best thing for the team.
Playing as the nine.
Because his advanced age and lesser mobility asks him to do things that or he just doesn't do things that maybe they need out of the team.
The team
needs out of him.
I hate to admit this. I didn't watch a lot of Serie A and Juventus this year. Was he playing the nine with Juventus a lot this year?
Oh, yeah.
Or was he playing his off striker to the wing, which is where he's been so lethal in his career?
He scored today. He scored against Hungary and he scored the penalty kick.
Assist today, too.
You know, he's still an amazing player, and I love the scene that happened this week when he sat down for the press conference and there was a bottle of Coke in front of him, and he moves the bottle of Coke out of the way, and he says, drink water, and it changes the market price on Coke.
$4 billion.
Yeah, it was crazy. All of that was fascinating, was good stuff. Portugal will continue, you know, Portugal will get through to the next stage. They won this tournament last year playing a very defensive style. I just think, to your point, that's really their shortcoming is in defense. Germany, I think it's clear to me, will be a somebody to contend, but will by and large, I don't think they are one of the teams that I had them going to the final, but I don't think they're
going to
win.
You had them going to the final.
I did. The way the bracket worked out.
So you had
France,
Germany in the final.
I have France, Germany in the final.
Okay.
That
could still happen.
Well, you know, it's just how the bracket came together.
This would not be the first tournament, World Cup or Euro, where Germany advances all the way to the final with having a team that is just very organized and methodical and not necessarily as talented. And I think this team is better than that, though they have talent. The reason we shortchange this team is mainly because why? Because of the coach, ironically, right? We just feel he's lost the room somehow.
And he's leaving.
And he's, yeah. Exactly.
So the way that I had everybody finishing, the knockout round bracket for me had them beating Croatia in the first round, then beating Sweden in the second round, and then beating Portugal in the third, and then facing France.
So you had Portugal going far, too.
I had them going to the semifinal. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know how that'll all play out. The other team that I think everybody, you know, there's a large fan base for here, at least on this side of the pond, is England.
Yeah. So stop right there, because it relates to this group and something you've said about England, that you feel psychologically, and some even have said it's a conspiracy and they actually want to finish second, because the first place finish in England's group, a first place finish means you're going to face the second place team out of this group of death, Germany, France,
correct.
Portugal. And so you have a couple of times on the show and then on Twitter, you've said this. You've said that psychologically England wants to finish second.
Well, subconsciously.
Or subconsciously,
Yesterday I made the very bold and brave prediction of a draw between Scotland and England.
I thought that was a great prediction,
the
history.
I got snowballed for
that. Yes, I saw that, and I do want to talk
about
that.
People are like, how in the world would you ever – England's going to roll them.
Yes.
And by the way, I had also predicted that they would draw in their opening game too, and I was super close with minus one very good sequence that was a draw written all over it in their opening game.
Yeah.
And so I think the Scottish are better than people are giving them credit for. And I do think subconsciously there is some thinking that, you know, we are kind of better off. Although that means they got to play France in the second round of the knockout stage.
Yeah. And also it means they would leave London.
Yeah. They have to go to Russia.
First Copenhagen, then Russia, as opposed to London, then Rome. That's a much better path, I think, easier travel wise. And so I just don't think, like, players and teams and coaches think like that. I think at the end of the day, you impose your will on the tournament, and if you feel like you have the chops to go far, you do what you need to do.
We're spending a lot of time talking about the wrong thing about England. What we should be talking about is the consistent disappointment that a team with all of this talent continues to be so terrible in attack. And Southgate is such a defensive-minded coach. He has, you know, Grealish, he has Kane, he has Sterling, he has Sancho, he has all the... Has Sancho even been on the field yet?
No.
I was reading a bunch of stats, and you can pick out individual players from other nations that have put more shots on goal in two games than England has as a country, as a team. And that's how ineffective they've been. I mean, in the game against Scotland, Che outshot England.
Yeah, he did?
Yes.
That's amazing, Che being the Scottish player.
The Scottish player plays for, yes. Yeah. And so it's an interesting...
So to me, Grealish should be starting.
Well, it's the decision to play Calvin Phillips, and Declan Rice is holding mids. And so if he would just brave up and let one of those guys go and replace them, he could shift that formation that he's playing with. There's lots of conversations about this. And when they kind of worked their way through the first game and, won against Croatia, you know, a team that they think is, you know, the team they lost to in the World Cup, and it came off a really nice sequence, and they kind of held their own. You know, Southgate's got this right. But then they go play against Scotland, their forever foe, in a game that's filled with history and all kinds of
Exactly. That's why those that look down on you for picking a tie.
I know.
Like, you know the history here?
Well, the history, and then the other part of it is the fact that it's at Wembley, right?
Pressure.
Scotland's never made it out of a group stage in any kind of tournament to speak of.
Yes.
So why just let your team attack a little bit, Gareth, and put on some put your talent in the right place. Here's the weird side story about all of this is Harry Kane, who by the way is saying he wants to leave Tottenham. Mm-hmm. At this point, Tottenham's going to ask for him. Would you, based on his two performances, would you pay $100 million for him? Would you pay $75 million for him?
It's hard to do that based on two games, though. And some people are like stud league players, right? And so you can look at it this way.
But I would also ask you, is what you're seeing out of Mr. Kane in this tournament Mr. Kane's fault?
Also, right, exactly.
Is it the style? Is it the formation? Is it
him and Foden, are they a good match?
Right.
That's why I think Grealish behind Kane, I think, will be good.
Because
Grealish brings something that no other player on that team has. Do you agree?
Yes.
And he also...
Although he came on late in the game and he did absolutely nothing.
No, I think he might have not done anything like your definition, but he came on and caused issues.
Okay.
By having him on the field.
I don't ever feel like Scotland was really... If Scotland was really stressed out about that game towards the end, it's just because they were self-doubting, not because they were actually in any real danger.
Their own psychological
issues.
Right.
I think Scotland is a fun team. Yeah. It was funny. Sky Sports had a list of player ratings, and the player ratings from England were essentially sixes, fives, and they gave Harry Kane a 3.
Oh, wow. Ouch.
They gave the Scots... Yeah. Sixes, sevens, and eights.
Yeah.
Now, tell me that the Scots were that much better than the English in that game. They weren't.
No.
They were all essentially a washout between the two.
Yeah.
But it's all about expectations, right?
Yeah, right? Sure. Yep.
The Scots outplayed the expectations and the English underplayed theirs.
Now, am I shocked it was 0-0? Not at all.
I did think there would be goals scored in the game, but it did not surprise me that it ended up being a draw.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you expected a draw to be a fair result, or not even a fair result, a result that can easily come out of this match.
Now, here's how it all sets up, because the surprise leaders now are the Czechs, who I had not getting out of the group.
Yeah.
They're now on top of the group with 4 points. The English have 4, Croatia 1, and Scotland 1. Croatia and Scotland play each other, and the English play the Czechs.
Yeah, so if the English and the Czechs draw, they both advance first, second.
So we're going to get that old classic,
you know,
Austria.
And then Scotland, Croatia will be fighting for third. But if there's a result in the other one, the loser of that result, and if the Czechs go up 1-0 on England, and England being the jittery side that they are for some reason.
So that's why it's interesting to think about. Gareth, does he change things up? Does he put Sancho on? Does he put Grealish on? Does he take Kane off?
Yeah, you got to put Sancho on at that point. And this is why this whole psychological thing, maybe we're off. But you got to be careful about that, because you'll end up third or not even advancing, although I think they probably advance no matter what now, right? No, not necessarily.
Maybe a 2014 tournament with third place pass-throughs isn't such a bad after all. All right, when we come back, we'll finish up talking about the European Championships next year on the Kick Around. All right, the Copa America is well underway, and lucky us, we have a Chilean on the show staff. So Andy will catch us up on all things Copa here in just a little bit.
Chili!
Welcome back to the Kick Around. It's halftime between Spain and Poland. And that's an important game. Both those teams need a result today, Andy.
They're all important. When you're playing the second game in group play, all games matter.
Poland got kind of screwed in their first game. That was a double yellow, I think it was. Is that the only red card in the tournament so far? Is that, the one Polish player?
That I've seen. I think so. That's the one everybody talks about.
And VAR has been interestingly, the interesting application of VAR in this tournament is that they have a VAR official that makes decisions on things like fouls in the box, handball calls, and then they have an offside VAR official just doing that, and I think it's worked better.
I tell you, VAR has worked great this tournament. It really has. They're quick, and every time they ask the referee to go check, It's been
overturned. Yeah. Yeah. So it's at least we're not having to fuss about it very much. All right. So Andy, you wanted to talk about the magic that I've been producing.
Yeah. So you last show we talked about how you went before the tournament started and you went and predicted every single game.
Yes, I decided I was going to predict how the groups would finish, mm-hmm. and then the subsequent bracket knockouts to finals. And then I decided, I kind of did it backwards, and then I decided I would go back and predict the result of every group stage game, not just win, loss, draw, but including a score, because I'm just that ridiculous.
As someone that would do this in his teenage years for World Cups, I can tell you how difficult it is to do this, because you're doing it before the tournament starts all the way through, and right now you're hitting about 50%, right?
Well, let's define some things. I am currently, before, and this does not include the game that is going on right now, of all the games that have been played and completed, I have, just on win, loss, draw, I have gotten, I am at 11 correct, 12 wrong.
That's basically,
I think that's
500.
Pretty good.
That's really good. People may think that's not good because you're predicting at a 50% clip, but actually that's pretty good.
Well, I'm particularly proud of what I think are the more difficult games, like predicting. I know a lot of, like, you and I think this is obvious, but predicting a draw between England and Scotland, mm-hmm. predicting France beating Germany, or today predicting that Germany would beat Portugal. Those are all ones I got right.
Plus, a lot of these teams are they're even, and so a 1-1 and a 2-1 is not far off, and that's a completely different prediction result, right?
Now, where I'm terrible
is predicting the
is
right
the scores.
Yeah.
And I've only gotten two of those right.
Because do you over-predict how many goals will be scored?
Well, it's funny. The first one I got right was the one that with 5 minutes left looked like it was the most wrong, which was Portugal 3, Hungary 0. And Portugal scored all three of those goals like in the last 7 minutes.
So one thing that you probably did in your predictions is you accounted for a certain amount of surprises.
Well, yeah.
Right? Yes.
Yes.
And I think the reason you're probably not doing better than 500, which is still good, is because we really haven't had a lot of shocking surprise. Like North Macedonia didn't win a game, even though they played okay and they were in it for the most part in their games.
I think
right?
what I've done is I've probably predicted more draws than there have turned out to be. Predicting Turkey Wales as a 1-1 or Finland Russia as a 1-1,
which you often see early in these tournaments.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to say kudos. Now, if I were to ask you now, if you had to, if you could re-predict, let's say, who wins it all. Let's just start with an easy one. Would you stick with France at this point?
I think I would, although the Italians are making a really surprising case. They look really good, and they don't look Italian either.
Correct, yeah. Italy looks very good. They've won both their games. They're scoring lots of goals, along with Belgium and the Netherlands. They're one of the three teams already guaranteed to go through.
Okay, so let's talk about the Dutch here for mm-hmm. a second. Because what's very interesting about the Dutch is that if you look at their results, and the fact that they had to come back and win that crazy game against against Ukraine 3-2, and then they won their next game against Austria 2-0,
mm-hmm. pretty easily.
They're doing okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, man, they're kind of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But here's what's interesting as a side note: the soccer tactic nerds out there are ripping this team apart.
Are they ripping it apart because they have preconceived notions about who's managing the team?
If you go watch any of these particular, channels, social media channels of mm-hmm. people that are really into tactics yep. and performance and the stats, they will make a compelling story as to why the Dutch will not go very far once they start playing legit competition yeah. because of spacing, the way that De Boer has this team put together, and players not playing in the right yeah. places.
And
so that's an interesting little thing to keep an eye on.
It is, and I don't think they are too far off, because at the end of the day, the Dutch did get a pretty easy group, and I had them... despite playing in an easy group, I even had them finishing second, and they're going to finish first in their group just because, I felt underwhelmed by their coach.
I had them going second in the group behind Ukraine.
But their group is so easy that they're easily going to advance, and this is the case where you see teams like this in these competitions. do really well early on, but it turns out that the competition wasn't as good. And when they advance, they're out. By the way, I would also keep France. I would still stick with France if I had to, like, if I could change my predictor for the champion.
Based on who they can put in defense and their overall depth, I completely agree with you.
It's now, all about depth.
One of the players that I want to ask you about, because it is tied to your favorite club team, is the oddity of the performances we're seeing from one Genie Wijnaldum for the Dutch.
Yeah.
Which is before he came to play for Liverpool, mm-hmm. I was largely unaware of Wijnaldum. I hadn't watched him play a lot. Mm-hmm. And I have become accustomed to watching him play a very specific style for Liverpool.
Right. A certain, yeah, formation.
But for the Dutch, he is like a completely different player in midfield. He's almost like a Conte type.
Yeah, he's also given given more freedom.
Yes.
Yes.
It is amazing.
And he's also the man.
And by making a comparison to Conte, just meaning the amount of ground he is covering,
mm-hmm.
he is, and he's more aggressive and attacking with the ball than he has been for Liverpool, and which just to me insinuates he's a far more complete player. While I've always liked him for Liverpool, he's even a better player than I realized, because I just have not seen him play for the Dutch.
And it will hurt Liverpool to not have him anymore, but... I'm not going to disagree with Klopp and how he's been playing him either, because it's worked, right?
Yeah. So, going back to the Italians, the interesting story of Locatelli, the guy that scored for them multiple times in this tournament, coming from Sassuolo, which is the really interesting club team that he plays for, that is a big hit with all the cool kids in the footballing community. That's a team everybody loves to watch because they're just so crazy attacking minded.
Mm. Kind of like Italy,
well,
which
yeah,
is
but,
crazy.
But the again, I
so before this tournament, this is spanning all these Euros that Italy has played in. They had never scored more than two goals in a game in the Euros in Euro history. This is Italy, top four finisher five times, four-time World Cup champion.
Right.
Italy had never scored more than two goals in a game. They've done it two straight games now in this tournament. Now the question about them. Do they fizzle at some point, or do they keep going? And who have they played? They played Turkey. But beating Switzerland 3-0 is not easy. It's not that Switzerland, they're world beaters, but Switzerland is a very disciplined, tight, compact team that knows how to get results. And to beat them 3-0, I think that was the statement that Italy made.
So we were talking about the remaining games. Once we get finished with the Spain-Poland game, what happens now is that on Sunday there are two games. On Monday there are four games, Tuesday two, Wednesday four. And what happens is each group plays their games at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So Sunday, tomorrow, Italy, Wales, Switzerland, Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
The Welsh have been an interestingly better team than I think a lot of people give them credit for.
Gareth Bale is still everything still runs through him.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? So how far can your team go if that's the case?
And Italy has nothing, and Italy's through, so
sure.
Maybe Wales gets a result there.
But Italy's
there.
Not guaranteed first, and you want to finish first.
All right, so on Monday it's Ukraine, Austria, and North Macedonia and the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. So Netherlands already guaranteed first. They may rest players. Northern Macedonia is now fighting for a third-place finish of sorts.
They might be able to pull that off.
But with their goal difference. I think, actually, they might be eliminated by now. There's one thing that we have to point out as the P1s follow along with tiebreakers. So within your group, if you are finished with a team to determine first place, second place, third place, within your group, it is head-to-head.
First.
That's first.
Right.
Within the group. Now, as you compare yourself to other third place finishers, if you finish third, then you go to the traditional goal difference.
Mm.
So goal difference doesn't take precedence over head-to-head within a group, and that's something important to keep in mind when you're trying to figure out permutations within each group.
All right. Monday afternoon is Russia-Denmark, Finland-Belgium. Which is interesting in its own right because of the whole Christian Eriksen thing and how all that kind of threw that group into a mess. Then on Tuesday, a pair of games, Croatia and Scotland. I don't know how the Battle of Andy plays out there.
You know, the loser's out. If there's a winner, they have a good chance of advancing as a third.
And the Czechs are facing off against England. And then on Wednesday, two pairs of games, the first being Sweden-Poland, Slovakia-Spain, and then Portugal-France. and Germany and Hungary to finish out group stage.
The group of death finishing in style, huh?
Yeah, that today's result between France and Hungary threw that whole thing into a direction nobody was anticipating. All right, well, keep everybody posted there. I'll keep posting my predictions. I mean, 50%'s not bad.
Not bad. No, I was going to give you kudos. Don't beat yourself down for that, because that's pretty good in a tournament like this.
When we come back, there is another tournament going on. It's the Copa America, and Andy will tell us all about it next on The Kick Around.
Brought to you by Globe Life Insurance and Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Tick.
I love soccer.
So I love soccer.
We were in the break in the Spain-Poland game, got nuts as Lewandowski does what Lewandowski does, just bosses around in the PK area, shoves Laporte over, and heads the ball in to tie the game.
You said VAR should have called it back.
Forearmed Laporte in half to win the ball, but VAR didn't.
Goal stood, 1-1.
And then just minutes later, Poland commits a foul in the box. Spain lines up for the PK, promptly bang it off the
woodwork
upright, and then Morata comes in and then moon shots it to France. So it is still 1-1.
Which is your prediction.
Which, by the way, is how I predicted the end result of the game.
You'll be wrong.
Probably. It's too early for this game to be 1-1 and finish up. What is it, 58th minute? Yeah, so I probably may still end up in a draw.
You know, we differ. I thought Spain looked fine that first game. They drew 0-0, and they just didn't put the ball in the net. They 85%, you know, possession rate.
But scoring goals is kind of a big part of this game, Andy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
One would argue it's the most important part of the game.
Really? Not just the prettiness.
That's right. You can possess all that stuff.
And Spain's playing at home in front of a home crowd, too. They have that advantage going for them, or disadvantage, because once the pressure climbs, it works against you, right?
Right, yeah.
Like with England.
I have to, when my wife and I went to Italy several years ago, we were in Rome, walking the streets of Rome, and I saw Chesney, the goalkeeper.
Oh, yeah?
In person.
In front, yeah.
Very odd human being in real life. He may have the longest arms, body arm ratio that I've ever seen in a human being.
Yeah,
like even compared to a basketball.
Oh, yeah,
no,
even
like
more
even
so.
For a
oh,
yes,
wow. Okay.
Yes. Like Dirk's arms are really long, but they make sense for his body.
Right.
Chesney looks like he has the arms of a guy that's 6'10" and he's really maybe 6'3".
Yeah, nice.
If that makes any sense.
Sure. Kind of Ruby Pulse-ish right there, the body to arm ratio.
Yeah, something like that.
Hey, great blast from the past reference. Very proud of you, Sammy, for that one.
Were you
even born when Ruby was a thing on the ticket?
Yeah, I was born when the ticket was created, so yes.
Ruby's still a thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
no.
He's still comes around for every NFL
Sounds
draft.
Sounds like somebody doesn't listen to the station.
No,
I make my bets based off of
what
Ruby Paul says.
Excellent.
I get his newsletter.
While you're board hopping at the ticket, right?
Because of Ruby.
Hey, he's got to make money somehow.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, yes, the European Championships are going on, but in the evenings is the Copa America.
Yeah, Copa America. And I think we are seeing now, the difference that having crowds in the stands makes and how it affects competition and your perception of a competition. Because to me, so far, Copa America has been a little disappointing. I think there are a few factors, one of which is they're playing in front of empty stadiums. I mean, and I think Fox, they put in a little bit of fake sound.
They're putting in a lot of fake sound.
Yeah, yeah. But Univision doesn't. And so you hear players, and it's just not the same. And watching the Euros with crowds, I think it does make a difference for sure. You know, it just how you perceive the game and how exciting you perceive the game to be.
Okay, so as I said earlier, because I'm having to watch a lot of the Euro tournament in the afternoon and evening, I'm not watching as much as the Copa as I would like to. I know you are focusing more on the Copa.
Well, it's because I'm watching more in real time.
Is the Copa lived up to its billing, or has it been the equal to the European tournament?
No. So that's why I was saying so far it's been more disappointing. And one factor is that, the crowd. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, too, is this Copa format this year, where they have two groups of five, and four teams advance out of a group of five.
So they're just eliminating two teams.
Right. And so the games are a little bit more irrelevant. one group is really good, the Southern group. The Northern group is Brazil and four other teams. So basically what the other group is doing, they're trying to just eliminate not having to play. They're trying to prevent playing Brazil in the next round, right? So you want to finish third or above, because fourth place in the other group then plays Brazil.
So is it first in one group versus fourth of the other group?
Yeah,
and then, okay,
exactly.
That's how it works.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So you just want to avoid playing Brazil. And then the third issue is the COVID issue right now in Copa America. Like over 80 people have, within the competition bubble, let's call it, have tested positive. And half of those are players and coaches and coaching staff. The other 40 are just support personnel, people that are working the event, people that are working the hotels. And so it kind of like takes a, you know, like you're missing players and coaches are having to rotate out. And I think that also affects the competition. And so where we are now is basically that Brazil, they keep on rolling. They're still the favorites. They won their both their games big. They haven't really played anybody. Venezuela without 12 players because of COVID. And then Peru, who's not very good this year. So that's the story out of one group. And the story out of the other group, which was the story heading in, and it's been the story with Argentina over the last 20 years or 15 years, is that they're a team with a bunch of question marks. It's Messi and a lot of question marks. And something's just haven't changed with Argentina. So this is where we are. For example, Colombia played Venezuela the other night. Colombia outshot Venezuela 23-2. Venezuela had 12 players out. You know, they got spanked by Brazil. Colombia outshot them 23-2, and the game finished 0-0.
So is it one of those games where you just
know...
And it
was still a boring game. Oh. It just still wasn't...
Okay, so when you say 24 shots, is it 24 moon shots, or is the Venezuelan keeper standing on his head?
No, 23 shots. Not on goal, not on target. 23 shots.
Okay.
So a lot of those are just bad
shots. Into
the
stands.
Yeah,
bad shooting.
Since
there's no fans, it takes a long time for the ball to come back kind of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So so you have one group with Brazil really good and a bunch of other teams trying to not be that fifth team. And I guess those games matter, but the games aren't high quality. And then a group that has good teams, like the Argentina-Chile game was a good game, but then you have Argentina play Uruguay.
Which was supposed to be a great game.
It was supposed to be a great game.
I
Suarez
fell asleep
and
watching it last night.
Yeah, it didn't live up to the billing. So now I will say, heading into this week, I'm going to give you two more matches to catch Copa America, because the games are going to get better as we near... The
P1s are suspect
round.
Of
yeah.
you, Andy.
Yeah, I know. So hopefully something comes through. With
Andy's
this.
Picks to click.
So Brazil plays Colombia on Wednesday. This will be Brazil's first real test, even though Colombia is not very good in this Copa America. 7:00. So, you know, I think you'll see a Brazil that will keep rolling and a Colombia side that's not very good, but it'll show you how bad that other group is. And then the next night, Thursday... At 7:00 also, Chile will play Paraguay.
Chile!
And basically that game is to avoid Brazil, because one of those two teams losing that game, depending on other results, could finish fourth and then have to face Brazil. So it's the game that you have to win to avoid facing Brazil. So...
Who is the worst team? Is it Bolivia
it's
Bolivia, Peru?
Bolivia, I think, is considered... The weaker.
That's sad because team. I used to be a big Bolivia fan.
Yeah, I know you followed
Marco
them closely Echeverry, for a long time.
Tuichi.
Yeah, they made the 94 World Cup. And on the other side is Venezuela because they have so many players out. You know, the other thing hurting this tournament too is leading up to the tournament, all these countries were playing qualifiers. So they had already been playing qualifiers for 10 days, 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Argentine-Chile game took place how many days after they had played each other in a qualifier?
Yeah, less than 2 weeks, like 10 days.
Yeah,
yeah.
Ridiculous.
Which is also 1-1. So the players are tired. They're exhausted. They're dealing with COVID issues. The games are irrelevant at this stage, largely, right? And there's no crowd. So, yes, it's kind of been a disappointing Copa America so far. Now, once they advance, right, different ballgame.
All right.
That's when you tune in.
So are you extremely giddy over the fact that Peru is crummy? I have to tell Sam and Josh a quick story about Peter and Andy. So
yeah,
I've known Peru
not doing well.
Right. So I've known Andy for 20-some-odd, 25, 26 years, whatever it is now. And I've always known that Andy was of some particular South American heritage. But this was long before the kick around was a thing. And one day, I don't remember where we were. I don't remember the context.
Pick up soccer.
He remembers. I made the criminal mistake of referring to Andy as Peruvian.
How could you?
You would have thought I had called him a pedophile.
Good Lord.
Jeez.
Is that accurate, Andy?
No, not that bad.
Liar, liar, pants on the fire.
Come on.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It's worse.
It's worse. Peruvian, I am Chilean.
Right.
And he gave me this look of just like disgust.
Did he push you up against a wall and say, listen here, Welpton?
He came over and he two-footed me.
Oh, my God. That's a red card.
During the game?
Straight red.
Hey, did I come in ankle high?
Yes,
studs high?
Yeah.
Into your ankles? Awesome.
So aggressive. Awesome. Just because I had mistakenly thought of him as Peruvian. How could you dare mistake Peru and Chile?
I mean, he's clearly Argentinian.
See? Now Sammy wants to get into it.
No respect.
Now Sammy wants to get into it.
Okay.
So if you ever meet Andy Swift in person, don't ever, ever refer to him as Peruvian.
Tomorrow at Kick Around Soccer.
Or just refer to him as something and roll on it and send it to us at the Kick Around email.
Right. P1s, you should not send Andy tweets referring to him and asking about Peruvian food and Peruvian culture.
Please don't do that.
And how his Peruvian mother is doing. Andy. You should not do that on the Twitter to Andy. He would not like
ceviche
that whatsoever.
Ceviche is actually pretty good. It's one thing they got going for.
Traitor.
Ceviche.
You were really mad that day. You were offended.
Because how long have you known me, Peter? You should know better. I don't call you like...
Do you even know what...
Jamaican Peter.
Where am I from? Do you know?
That's the Jamaica? Least believable ethnicity I think you could assign to Peter.
Like if you were going to
pick British Virgin Islands.
If you were going to pick any country in the world that I was from, Jamaica is
Russia.
Probably not on the
I
list.
I think we can take the Caribbean islands off the list.
All
here.
Right. Fair
we
enough.
Can narrow this down
Fair
very
enough.
Quickly.
All right.
Who was it? Oh, that's right. There was a girl playing for Jamaica in the women's game the other day that didn't look Jamaican to me at all. She caught me off guard. That surprised me.
She looked the opposite of Jamaican to you?
If I remember correctly, she was a blonde-haired. She looked German.
Maybe she German parents born in Jamaica.
Maybe.
That happens.
That's all how that happens. Okay. Enough international tournament talk. When we come back, believe it or not, FC Dallas has a game tonight. So some surprises there, along with the U.S. Men's National Team Gold Cup roster has been announced. We'll talk about that next on the Kick Around. I'm looking forward to going to a concert soon.
When was the last time you went to a concert, Peter?
Well, it was obviously pre-pandemic. I don't remember which was
Small
the
venue.
Last one I went to. Yeah, I'm sure it was. It may have been something at the Kessler.
Yeah.
The Wiggles.
That was funny, actually. Good for you. All right, welcome back to the Kick Around. We have a couple of segments left. We will have a conversation about the manufacturing of a support fan base during the dribble. That's
intriguing. I'm intrigued.
That's America's favorite
topic. Soccer
segment. This will be deep soccer conversation.
Okay, you're gonna pick my brain.
Yeah, I will. But what I want to talk about here, first off, is the U.S. men's national team now knows how qualifying for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar will take place. They know who their opponents are, all the qualifications, and it appears, Andy, it will be you versus me.
That's right.
As half of your lineage,
yes,
Canada has qualified for this final round of qualification.
They've expanded the round from 6 to 8 teams. What are we calling it, by the way? The octagonal, the ocho? That's
the oct.
Okay. But this is
Which
how Canada
was
able to make it in.
Say that again?
This is how Canada was able to make it
well,
in.
Well, good. I'm glad you're in. Yeah. So the United States has an interesting path. They got to go to some places they probably don't want to go to. We have more talent than they've ever had before.
But you still got to go and get a result in like Honduras and Costa Rica.
And El Salvador.
Yeah. Those are tough venues for sure. I think the
tell everybody a little story about the venue that they play at in El Salvador, because you've been there.
Yeah, that's called Little Vietnam is what they call the supporter section.
And that's not a reference to fine dining or lovely clothes or artwork. It's a
that's the supporter section in the corner there where you have to go take a corner kick.
And that's where they throw bags of urine at you and stuff like that. Yeah. Suppose I've seen it happen on live television.
Yeah, that is a very tough venue. The U.S. has been able to get results there. Costa Rica is, you know, along with Mexico, Mexico City, is probably the toughest venue out of all of these that they have to go play in. And you would think Jamaica is probably the weakest team to play against on the road out of these eight groups. But, you know, you got to finish top three to automatically qualify into the World Cup. If you finish fourth, then you got to go play one of those playoffs against another confederation. So finish in the top half, and it's doable, right? But you have...
It has to.
You know, Mexico, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Honduras, those are not easy opponents.
Costa Rica is on a downtrend. Their kind of golden generation has started to wash out.
So I don't think the U.S. has won in Costa Rica in qualifying.
No.
So that's tough. Man, Panama's good. So
and
anyway,
Canada's on the rise.
And Canada's on the rise. Thank you.
All right. So that starts in September.
You're very kind. Yes, September 2nd.
Okay,
is when it starts.
In the meantime, the Gold Cup will start in just after the 4th of July, and many of those games are being played here in the Dallas area. The U.S. is not necessary. The U.S. may or may not, depending on where they land in the knockout stages, assuming they make it that far.
Where do they start off?
I think they're playing in Kansas City, I think, is where Kansas City or maybe Chicago is their main place.
Why don't I go look
places.
At this up
you
while
look
you keep
that.
Talking?
Now, the reason why this is interesting is because there has been an initial roster of up to 60 players named for the for the team for the United States by Greg Berhalter. Lots of MLS players, lots of youth. There is a litany of players on this list, I promise you, unless you are the most hardcore MLS soccer nerd you've never heard of. There are very young players on this team, players that have not played for the United States, and there's one that I don't even think is naturalized and even qualifies, so he won't make the final roster, but they're trying to sort through and get guys.
Yeah, so I just wonder why... Well, they're not going to use European-based players, so the field expands, right?
And well, I think, if they've got guys that are on the fence as to whether or not they'll play for the United States, they invite them to a camp and get them a little excited about playing.
By the way, Kansas City, you were right.
Yeah, so that all kicks off, and there's a bunch of... The one thing I just found out, and I did not know this, Qatar is the guest nation playing in the Gold Cup.
Yeah, September of last year is when they were invited to play. I think that's a reciprocal move. I think one of the CONCACAF teams, you thought it was Mexico perhaps, played in a tournament in the Far East, and this was the reciprocal move for that. The U.S., by the way, is in the group with Canada, Martinique, and then a preliminary match winner of another minnow set of teams. But it's a fairly easy group for the U.S. to move out of until they start facing more stiff competition in later rounds.
What is interesting is if you're ever concerned about happenings with guys from the Dallas area, out of the 60, FC Dallas will have as many as 19 past and present players represented on various Gold Cup rosters. I think there are nine that are on the United States roster, and then the rest of them are spread out amongst different nations. That's pretty impressive for one academy to have produced that much talent.
That came through the academy.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
Or just
played for FC
uniform.
Dallas in some ways, but the majority of them are guys that started off playing in the academy in some way, shape, or form. So, kudos to them for pulling that off. Now, go ahead. What were you going to say?
That we shouldn't forget, too, that...
Oh, my God. Are you okay?
A little cough. You
dying over there?
You okay? You mean to get the paddles?
So
did you go Christian Eriksen on me?
Okay, maybe a little too soon.
One thing remember about Gold Cup is that the U.S. will use this as a way to gain just experience for the young guys. I mean,
yeah.
Right, yeah. So expectations in check.
Speaking of FC Dallas, they actually return to play tonight, 7:30 at Toyota Stadium. They are facing off against Minnesota. It should be interesting because Buzz is traveling, but he has been passing on some information about anticipating starting lineup.
Oh, yeah. What do we
tonight,
have?
Tonight, hold on to yourself, Andy. Okay. I think it's the official return to the starting status of kick-around favorite and prodigal son, Paxton Pomykal.
Right.
Yes.
Playing the eight.
No.
Oh.
Probably playing left wing.
All right. That's fine. He's back starting 11.
Two notes. While we were gone, Dallas did acquire a new Argentine holding mid.
Mm-hmm.
How do you pronounce his name? Quinón is his last
Quinón?
Name. First name, Facundo. Facundo.
Uh-huh.
Quinón.
Mm-hmm.
He comes from Lanús.
Yeah.
Had also played at Old Boys.
Yeah.
He's 28. He's a Santos replacement. I think he's a true holding mid,
yeah.
which is a position they've been desperately missing this year.
Yeah.
So he's likely, surprisingly, going to start tonight.
Yeah. So I will say this. Not having seen this guy play, we don't know much about
Nobody
him.
Nobody knows anything about him.
Not a bad age. And holding mids from Argentina tend to be decent players. They are very technically and tactically aware and skilled.
Yes.
And they've scouted him, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up working out pretty decently for the club. Never haven't seen him, though. So,
yeah, and it's very rare that Dallas just throws a guy on right off the bat like this, but because of contractual situations, somehow they got him. He got out of his deal, so we didn't have to wait for the transfer window. And he's been here for a few weeks, so I guess they're fitting him right in. They've definitely needed. The other thing to keep an eye on is their center back situation. There's been some health issues with both their starting center backs, Matt Hedges and Martinez. We don't know the status of either one of those. Brisson, the third center back that's been starting, has been traveling to Brazil for a green card.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he made it back or got back in time. So what's interesting is could we see, if any of those three are missing, could we see the young Nkosi Tefari play in that position? Or Justin Che, who just returned from time trialing over at Bayern Munich.
He's
and
so
played.
Young to put him at center
18 years
back.
Old, yes.
That's
so.
Wow, that's an issue, right? When your three center backs are out.
Who knows? You may get a combo of 18-year-old Justin Che and Nkosi as your two starting center backs for all you know.
So
tonight.
That the one concern is that the center back duo is always one that consistency and playing together is
that's
what
a big
helps.
Deal. That's a big part. And the other story to watch tonight is see who Lucci starts up top. Jara's been terrible. He made a lot of money, and everybody's kind of turned against him. Ricardo Pepi really needs to get some time. He's the young 18-year-old.
Will we see it tonight? Who knows?
Could we see that would be delightful. So that's at 7:30 tonight. I think it's on Channel 21 if you don't go up to the stadium. But I am going.
You're gonna be there, huh?
Here's the deal. This is kind of a big deal. I am going only as a fan.
Wow.
I'm going with a friend of mine.
You will not.
I'm just saying I'm not covering it as a media member.
Okay.
I've acquired and purchased a ticket.
Okay.
I am going to the game with my friend.
So you get to yell and
I'm
going to
wear
and
my Huntsman t-shirt.
Right.
And
okay.
I get to be.
Are you
going to
boo the referee?
I may boo the referee.
Where are you sitting generally, like in general terms?
I'll sit in the kind of the middle section,
the
106.
Like
I'm sitting somewhere in 106.
Where you like to sit there.
Right there.
You have flares?
No flare. They don't let me use flares.
That's disappointing.
Maybe I'll wear my clapping hat.
So you're going to, with somebody, taking them to the game, are you going to beat them down by being on Twitter the whole time? Or
no,
are you going to
I don't generally do a lot of that when I'm at the game.
You will engage with.
Yes, because I haven't seen this guy in a long time.
Yeah,
Yeah.
It's the polite thing to do, Peter.
He's a young guy who I think I kind of helped get into the sport.
Nice.
He's a sports nut.
Okay.
And I took him to an FC Dallas game many, many years ago, and he's really become a hardcore soccer fan.
Okay.
And Dallas is his favorite team, despite the fact that he doesn't live here. So
be very proud if you stay off that phone. Just watch the game.
Thanks, Mom. Appreciate that.
The Geek Out.
I've watched games with you. Sometimes it's like
Are you going to call the game in your seat?
I want to watch the game. I don't want to stare at my phone.
I hear you. That's fair enough.
Okay.
All right. Fair shout.
Yep.
You've been hanging out with my wife?
I know this is at you at dinner also, oh. Probably. I can tell.
Okay. When we come back, it's America's favorite soccer segment. How do you manufacture a fan base? Next here on the Kick Around. Spain won. Poland won. Oh, did I guess that exactly right?
You know what I regret now?
I regret
giving you kudos for your picking.
I'm now officially now 500.
You're insufferable now.
I'm officially at 500 on my guesses of win, loss, draws in the European 2020 tournament, and I've gotten 3 scores correct.
You know, I can't wait for the World Cup to just do this with you together. Oh. Pre-pick every game.
Are we going to do this?
Before the next World Cup, yeah. It's only a year or so away, right? A year and a half away.
Is that where we do the bet of all bets?
That's where we do the bet of all bets.
Should we let the Sorois decide what the bet payoff is?
No, we shall not do that.
They want to come to work.
Okay, crazy.
Do that Waffle House bet.
Which one is that?
The Waffle House bet.
The one that was trending all week? The guy who had to spend 24 hours in a Waffle House for every waffle he ate?
That's right.
An hour
1 hour less.
Time.
So did you... Right. It didn't seem like a lot of waffles. I'm sorry,
dude. You're just wrong on this one. Like 4 waffles is like 2,000 calories. Like that, the Waffle House waffle.
I might lose on purpose just to find out.
Do you not know Waffle House, Andy? Is this not a thing that you?
I love Waffle House. I'm watching the. I don't eat waffles at Waffle House though.
Okay, see, because these are like big plate sized waffles. Like
but he was eating 2 at a time, and I don't know.
Yeah, he did make some critical errors here, but like these are big old honking waffles.
Look, Sam, you don't have to talk to me about all you can eat challenges.
Oh, really? That's a very braggadocious little claim.
Yeah, Peter hates that about me. I discuss Peter with
He is the weird food snob that also loves a super Chinese buffet.
I share my love of buffets with Andy, but like that's different than a food challenge.
Whatever.
The sneeze guard gets
Sam,
in Andy's way.
Sam, if you want to bring it. We'll do food challenge.
I'm not trying to challenge you. I have no... I'm already
All right, stop. Stop. Let's do the dribble. Other things to do here. Andy, you wanted to say something about ratings.
So, yes, because we were talking about how we are slowly becoming a soccer nation. And here's more proof. 12%
random
increase.
50-year-old white guys guessing scores of European tournaments are correctly.
That helps. Radio broadcasters not following the national team because they didn't qualify for the last World Cup. Not one of the reasons.
And you're so mad at Bob and Corby about that?
Yeah, 12% ratings increase, Euros, Euro over Euro. Over the last one.
Who did
so
the
far.
Did ESPN have the last tournament?
Man, I don't remember, but I think it was.
Yeah, they're doing a really good job.
They are. And you know, it's been interesting because CBS did the Nations League and we saw it on CBS. That was one network. Right. And then ESPN ABC, they're doing the Euros. We're watching Fox for Copa America and now the Olympics and Premier League NBC coming up later in the summer. But I want to give props to a play-by-play analyst duo and a studio analyst. And they're both on Fox. And ESPN's been doing a bang-up job. Nothing against ESPN with the Euros.
Except for Taylor Twellman.
But John Strong and Stuart Holden.
Yeah, I agree.
Really, really good.
Yeah,
They really are good. There are top American-born... Well, actually, Stuart is Scottish, but... American based.
I think John is the best play-by-play guy, and I will say this, as much as Taylor Twellman drives me nuts in many other ways, I still think he's the best in-game analyst.
I don't disagree, but he has his thing sometimes, and it kind of drives me nuts.
Yeah, he tries to go off in his Stephen A. Smith, Scott Van Pelt amalgamation.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah,
and that is wherever it all falls apart.
Yes, but Strong and Holden together, great team.
Yeah.
And then in the studio, Heather O'Reilly. Have you seen her?
I have seen little bits of that, yes.
Very good analysis. Like, good, decent analysis. And when it starts to get away and getting stupid and Alexi takes it one way, she brings it right back, brings it back on point. Very good.
You know, on ESPN, I was mystified as to who the female studio host was. I did not recognize her.
The British girl?
And then, yes. Yeah. And then suddenly it dawned on me, oh, I do know who that is. It's just been many years. I used to have a mad crush on her. Kelly DeGleish. She now goes by Kelly Cates.
Okay.
She is of the DeGleish family.
Yes, she
is the daughter of that DeGleish, and she used to be the studio host out of the London-based soccer show that was on Fox Sports World back in
the day.
She's
Kenny's daughter.
Yes, Kenny
wow.
DeGlisha's daughter.
I
think that's right.
So I will look at it.
And she is related to Kenny DeGlisha in some way. I'm 99% sure that's her dad. Okay. And, you know, it's been 20 years or whatever, and she doesn't necessarily look the same, but that's exactly who that is.
She's not bad. She's a little just like blah, right?
She used to be much better. She's not. I have not particularly enjoyed her.
Yeah.
All right. The thing I wanted to talk about, this is a topic that came up on Buzz Carrick's Third Degree podcast, which if you have any interest in anything having to do with our local MLS team, you should absolutely go listen to every week. It's very good. Yes, I'm a part of it, but it's really all about Buzz and Dan. Anyway, I asked a question because this is the weekend that Austin FC opens their stadium, Q2, in Austin. This has been talked about forever. It's getting an incredible amount of media coverage. It's all the rage. Austin is a very, very hot property these days. But on the inverse of that, there is a lot of people from other markets that are snickering and sneering and giggling at the way that Austin has gone about growing their fan base.
Why is that?
Well, you know, Austin's done a very good job. Well, first off, you have to start with the backstory of how they got their team, which all centers on a story about Columbus and the owners kind of snakily stealing them. Set that aside.
Yeah. Okay.
Once he got the team in Austin, they did a very effective job of marketing and branding. But one of the side stories that has turned a lot of people off is how their supporters groups have been launched. So there are two. There's Austin Anthem, and there's another one called Los Verdes. Mm-hmm. And what many people are objecting to is they're not really independent, that in many ways they are funded and organized by Austin FC front office members. And here's what I am worried about, because in a state now with three Major League Soccer teams, we have two, one of which that has been here since day one and one that came in several years later in Houston, that have half full stadiums and atmospheres not much better than your average book club. Austin is rolling out this new thing this weekend that I'm 99% sure is going to be a pretty, pretty kick-ass atmosphere. And the question that I have is, if in fact that is the case, and Austin is able to sustain this kind of atmosphere, not just through this season, but into upcoming seasons, maybe that's the way to go about it. And I'm wondering from your perspective, as somebody that was part of a team that launched in Major League Soccer from day one and trying to work with old supporters groups and fan bases, is there a right or wrong way to go about doing that?
No, I don't think there's a right or wrong way. I think whatever grows organically and ultimately results in a fan base growing and staying strong and sticking with the team through thick and thin is a way to go. The one thing, I will give the Inferno a lot of credit back in the day, the old Inferno.
The original supporters group for Dallas Burn.
Because we approached with, you know, we can help you this much or we can help you this much, you know, and we found a happy medium. But that club was always, that supporters group was always very supportive of the club and helping us in ways they could help us to spread the word and to be there. And we just never reached that level of antagonism that I hear about with other clubs, you know. And maybe it was just different times and, you know, different fervor. I don't know.
It is interesting because Austin is being more than just accommodating. They're kind of being the drivers of this, right? And I think that's the extreme that tends to turn people off, because what happens when the team sucks? Are they going to clamp down on the kind of songs they can sing, or are they telling them what kinds of banners and TIFO they can hang? That part is very unclear to me.
Yeah.
But in the inverse, you've got what's going on here with Dallas, which is a very antagonistic relationship between the front office and the supporters groups. They're constantly at loggerheads about things.
There's fault both sides, maybe.
Sure. I'm just saying that it's not a good relationship.
Yeah, right. I just wonder if Austin is starting it that way, and they'll have these two supporters group grow organically through that mechanism.
People would say that's not organic. It's the antithesis of organic.
Yes. Correct. What I meant to say was then you'll have another one or two start up organically and become a supporters group on their own. Because I don't think the club will stop group C.
Yeah. See, I agree. This is where I think happens is that if, in fact, Austin is as amazing as everybody says it is, at some point other people will want to start their own supporters groups. And that will be interesting to see if Precourt and the front office in Austin, how they handle those groups in relation to how they handle the groups that they paid for and launched. Because I have been saying, you know, what's interesting about the Austin situation is their stadium is in just enough of an odd spot in Austin that it's not super accessible. There's not a ton of parking. They did a game the other day with the U.S. Women's National Team, and after the fact, there was all kinds of concern and derision around how awful of an experience of getting in and out of the stadium was. And so, because of this, I tend to think that if you were starting a business like this, it behooves you to take proactive steps to build your fan base. Mm-hmm. And if that means I'm going to help pay for banners and maybe even pay for drums or whatever it is, I don't see that as me dictating. Yeah.
As long as you let other ones grow organically if they want to.
Right. And at the end of the day, if we go several months or a year into this, and Austin is consistently the best atmosphere in Texas in terms of Major League Soccer, and Houston and Dallas continue to be this thing that nobody thinks is very fun, nobody's going to give two squirts how it was started.
Because they grew the fan base in a certain way.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
Game.
Well, we are going. You know we're going, right?
All right, let's make it happen.
We have tickets to go to the game that Dallas is playing in Austin. I think it's in September or October.
All right.
We have been invited by somebody who has season tickets to use their tickets, and you and I are going as a duo. Are we driving down together?
I don't know, man. Depends how much you talk.
All right. That's the end of today's soccer segment. We know it as.
Can you be quiet on a road trip?
We just sing songs.
Oh, okay.
I have a playlist.
Wouldn't mind singing songs. That'd be all right.
Okay, never mind. I'm glad I'm not going.
Are you not looking forward to going to the FC Dallas Austin game in the new stadium with me?
Yes, I'm looking forward. We're talking specifically about the car ride, and then now you're asking. I'm like, yeah, the car ride will be okay unless you're an over-talker on road trips. Sometimes I just like to take in the sights, you know, and the I-35
Andy,
construction.
We're both
blah,
only
blah, blah,
children.
Blah, blah.
What do only
blah,
children
blah, blah,
do?
Blah, blah,
they spend a lot
blah,
of time
blah, blah,
by
blah,
themselves.
Blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Make a lot of that noise. I don't remember when that game is, but that guy is super nice to offer that up.
Yeah.
I'm excited to go do that. So that'll happen sometime September, October, whatever the first home game at Austin against Dallas
and
is.
Then we will judge the atmosphere, the team building.
We'll dictate and judge harshly
if it's good or bad.
The atmosphere and the quality. Which will probably largely be dictated by the result of the game.
Concession lines, too, we're going to judge.
And the concession lines. And the beer. The Belgian beer. Okay, are we back next week? Yes, we're back next week. Watch all your European and South American soccer you can, boys and girls. DJ, thanks for doing those tickers. Sam, thanks for producing. Josh, thanks for pushing buttons and making things work. P1s, we love and adore you. Go on, get out. Get stuck in. And win your 50s. I love soccer.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Plaza, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM Flower Mound.